and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Recently, an alleged plot to topple the government has raised concerns about the potential reoccurrence of the political instability we saw in 2020, which was triggered by the Sheraton move. Now, as a consequence, there have been calls for a fixed term Parliament Act, and that's come to the fore recently, a bill which is aimed at, in theory, to maintain an elected government until the end of its term, this to ensure political stability. Now, is this a positive reform towards strengthening parliamentary democracy, or is it a knee-jerk reaction to the so-called Dubai move that we've seen recently with potential unintended consequences if implemented? Now, joining us on the show is Dr. Tricia Yeo. She is the CEO of the think tank Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known by its acronym, IDEAS. Tricia, thank you for joining me today. Let's talk about the need for a fixed-term parliamentary act. Is there a need? Are there gaps or weaknesses that a fixed-term parliament act can address?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me. So the idea behind a fixed-term Parliament Act, let's talk about why it could be beneficial. And even before, long before the Sheraton move, so not even talking about the, you know, famed Dubai move, even long before the Sheraton move, IDEAS and, you know, several other experts had already called for the possibility of a fixed-term Parliament Act. Back then, it was not so much to do with the stability of government, which now we know as a primary factor exists. But back then, it was really about fixing the election date once every 5 years so that there would be a lot more predictability. This would shore up business confidence, investor confidence. Everyone knew exactly when the election would take place. The US, for example, without having such an act, already has its election mandated. So everyone knows every 4 years, the second, Tuesday of November, everyone's going to go into election. That's fixed. And so that predictability, I think, is what was very encouraging. Then you fast forward to post-2020, and then, of course, now post-2023, the two moves in question. The first one worked, the second one failed. The speculation of these moves, one after another, obviously continue to lend a doubt as to whether this coalition government will stay in power. And this is why it has come up now in a lot more, it has garnered a lot more public interest. The idea behind the Fixed Term Parliament Act is to ensure that there will be 5 years in which a coalition government stays. But there are exceptions as well. So I think in the version of the FTPA that is being propagated by some, there are exceptions. So it's not, I think sometimes as well, the term Fixed Term Parliament Act, fixed term is a little bit of a misnomer, because there are other things that are trying to be achieved apart from just making the parliament fixed. The reason for this is that there are exceptions, right? So the exceptions would be if there is a vote of confidence or no confidence in parliament, and if the budget is voted against, because that traditionally is seen as a vote of no confidence in the government of the day. So the exceptions are actually what we want to look at. I think given the Malaysian, the specific Malaysian context of change of government by SD, statutory declarations, this is what frustrates most Malaysians. To be honest, I think that seems to be the primary focus here, right? We want to avoid at all costs a change of prime minister, a change of government via statutory declarations. The anti-party hopping law was intended to resolve this, but as we know, there are loopholes in that law, and these SDs still continue happening. That's one. I think the second goal of an FTPA, which would be to make mandatory confidence or no confidence votes in parliament. This is actually a positive thing, because it means that you will avoid the practice of signing statutory declarations, which take place, you know, shrouded in secrecy. But if you really want to make your vote for a specific prime minister, do so in public, do so by the means of parliament. That's the second. And I think the third thing, which is also very important, is to regulate the prime minister's discretion to call for elections. Having such an FTPA essentially denies the prime minister of the day the unilateral authority to call for a new election. But that's not all, right? So I think there is also a need to regulate several other things. So number one, there's also a need to regulate the fact that after a government loses a confidence vote, or if a new government fails to be formed, in the UK's case, they actually had 14 days to form a new government, whether or not a fresh elections is called for. So that there needs to be some kind of regulation for that. And I think the other thing which we have talked about before, which needs to be addressed now, is that there is no caretaker government law. So there also needs to be regulation over the conduct of a caretaker government, because the caretaker government will be the one to decide, right, whether the election will be called. So I think we're dealing with a couple of different things here. The main thing I think people should remember is that the goal of this act is to actually secure stability, which is sorely needed in today's political context, so that other reforms, particularly on institutional reforms and on the economy, those can get going. But at the same time, I think it's important to think about the objectives, as I mentioned earlier.
Trisha, can I ask you very quickly about the, because you mentioned the UK, and I think a lot of people refer to that, the fact that the Fixed Term Parliamentary Parliament Act in the UK was repealed because there was criticism over its effectiveness. How do we think about that for a Malaysian context?
Yeah, so the UK, of course, so the UK had an FTPA Act in 2011, and it seems to have served its purpose at least once, because which is also, again, going back to the term Fixed Term Parliament Act, right? So if the purpose of the Fixed Term Parliament Act in the UK was actually to deny the unilateral decision-making powers of the prime minister to call for an election, and it required a two-third majority of support in the government to call for an election, then it actually worked, because the 2015 election was actually not held after a full term. So the discretionary power of the prime minister, I think that's something that really needs to be talked about, right? Mm. So is it the prime minister's prerogative, or do you want to give those powers back to, in the UK's case, the House of Commons? In the Malaysian case, of course, it's the Dewan Rakyat.
Yeah, well, sorry, Trisha, we've run out of time, and it's an important topic to talk about, but we've got multiple voices on the show today, and we will come back to revisit this, of course. It's one that is complex and layered and will require further discussion. But thank you for being on the show, Dr. Trisha Yeo from Ideas Malaysia. We're going to take a very quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Joining me now is political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat. He's deputy head of strategy for the Asia headquarters of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network at Sunway University. And he's also part of Project Summer, which is an initiative advocating for institutional reforms. Chin Huat, thanks for joining me on the show. Let's hone in on some of the concerns surrounding the Fixed Term Parliament Act. Some have argued that this FTPA isn't democratic in spirit, that the enactment of such an act is not really a reform, but rather a way to control or contain dissent, denying parliamentarians the freedom of choice to express maybe their loss of confidence in a prime minister. What are your thoughts on this contention?
Let me be very clear. If we're going to introduce a fixed-term parliament act in Malaysia, as proposed by Project Sama and previously still by Bersih, what we would see are only two differences. First, the power to seek royal consent for an early election would be shared by two-thirds of the parliamentarians instead of being monopolized by the Prime Minister, as it is now. Second, if you want to bring down the government, you would have to bring motions of no confidence or defeat a motions of confidence or defeat a budget in the House. You cannot use statutory declarations or SD as a way to bring down the government. So the question here, which of these two changes is undemocratic? Would it be more democratic that if Prime Minister solely has the power to force an early elections, or it is more democratic if MPs can secretly sign their SD to bring down a government?
Right. Chino, on that note about SDs, so we already have a law to ensure political stability to avoid this hopping, the anti-hopping law that you were such a big proponent of. Do we need more laws to ensure political stability to avoid changes of government via SDs?
Yes. The reason is we are basically caught in two extreme undesirable situations. One is to allow any groups of MPs to decide when a government should fall without any law. Second is to tie it down that governments would not fall even if they are unpopular or even if they have few, because MPs have no power. Now, our anti-hopping law has taken a middle ground that it would only force by-elections on those MPs who actively quit their party. They are not penalized for crossing the floors. And that's why some parties have amended their party constitution to derive power from anti-hopping law. Ultimately, what we are seeing here today with all these talks of London move, Jakarta move, Dubai move, it's not even about bringing a vote of no confidence to Dewan Rakyat. But instead, you have people who simply gather SD or make a claim that they have gathered enough SD to bring down the government. So it causes political instability, even they do not have the number. So what a fixed-term parliament act can do is to actually supply a clear procedure that a government can only be brought down on the floor of Dewan Rakyat. Mm. So for that matter, we must have corresponding amendments to the standing orders of Dewan Rakyat to prioritize these motions.
Can you explain why that's important, Chin Huat?
Currently, it will be very difficult for you to bring a motions of no confidence to the House because the Prime Minister can block you through the Speaker. So we need to clear the path. Now, that would address really what is undemocratic now. Currently, it's actually hard to bring down the government, even if they are actual justified grounds. But on the other hand, a government that need not be brought down because there's no justified ground to do so can still be brought down if someone managed to gather all this SD and so on. And why it's so important for us to see MPs voting in the House rather than just signing SD, because they should be responsible. People need to know who they are. Most of all, if you allow MPs to sign SD, they basically stand to gain their benefit as kingmakers if the plot succeeds. But they would not pay any price if the plot fails. But to go to the floor, then they have to make it clear they can only have the benefit of one side.
Right. I wanted to address, if the proposed law does come into fruition, what makes for a good FTPA? What needs to be spelled out clearly in this legislation to make it effective to avoid any unintended consequences or hidden challenges that might emerge?
We need to ensure that the standing orders would be amended to prioritize motions of confidence and no confidence, as I mentioned before. But it's also important, we need to raise the threshold of amending this law or its essential provision to a two-third majority. Because if the law say you can only table, you can only request the royal consent for the dissolutions of parliament if you have a two-third or you have lost the confidence. Now, if this law can be amended by a simple majority, it would not be able to survive. That's actually what happened in the UK, and this is why what failed in UK can succeed in Malaysia.
Chinua, how would you address concerns that the FTPA might infringe upon royal powers of the Yang di-Pertuan Agong? How would you address that?
Thank you. It will not affect the King's power at all, because the Fixed Term Parliament Act will only add one extra safeguard against arbitrary requests for early dissolution. So currently, the King is the only safeguard to deny that. With the new law, the Prime Minister, unless having lost his or her majority, would need to get two-thirds support from Dewan Rakyat. So it would make any early dissolutions more rigorous than otherwise. And that's the reason why this is to be tabled as an ordinary parliamentary act rather than a constitutional amendment.
Thank you for speaking with me. That was political scientist Professor Wong Chin Huat. We're going to take another quick break here and consider this. We will be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about a Fixed Term Parliament Act, which has been proposed as a way to ensure political stability of an elected government to serve until the end of its term. Now, what are the constitutional considerations as stated in the Constitution, also in the spirit of the law, but also by convention here in Malaysia? Let's speak now to Professor Dr. Nik Ahmad Kamal Nik Mahmud. He's a constitutional lawyer and head of the Governance Law and Management Cluster of the National Professors Council. Professor Nick, thank you so much for being on the show with me today. What do you make of calls for a Fixed Term Parliament Act? What are your considerations about this proposed law?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you. I believe that there is a reason for it. The proposal came from the Deputy Prime Minister, and it is coming at a time when I think issues about possible, SD submission to the Tripura Kebahagiaan Yang di-Pertuan Agong, and of course we have been looking at it for a couple of weeks, and so far we have not seen anything concrete. But then again, this could recur the law does not disallow such action to be taken. But looking at Fixed Term Parliament law, there are at least 26 countries of the world that have such law, but all they are not similar in the sense that they are laws that they are countries with very strict Fixed Term Parliament law. Others are quite flexible. So if we are looking at the UK had it in 2011, But they had abolished the act in 2022. So that only shows that there are problems in the act, you know, especially when the government is trying to deal with issues of political crisis, for example, and they cannot dissolve parliament, and therefore they have to live with it for the period until the parliament's end. So that's one challenge. But as far as Malaysian constitution is concerned, if such act is to be introduced, of course there's a need to the amendment to the constitution where you need to have a two-third majority, especially the provision with regards to the dissolution of parliament on the advice of the prime minister to the Yang Di-Tuan Agong would have to be amended in such a way that that advice can only be taken place at the end of the term of the fixed term period of parliament is either 4 years or 5 years. We have at present a 5-year term. Okay, so in that respect, there's a need to look at that. And of course, to amend other provision, the constitution that relates to the powers of the Yang Tuan Agong, especially when it comes to dissolution of parliament, right. Where, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, just to interrupt, I'm glad that you brought up the UK, but there are broader constitutional frameworks at play here, differences between the UK without a written constitution and Malaysia with a written constitution. Can I ask you, Prof, what the if we think about the constitutional powers accorded to the Prime Minister and also to the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong in terms of dissolution of Parliament, can a fixed-term Parliament Act avoid contravening those constitutional provisions by not needing to amend the constitution, but going through a parliamentary act, a law that doesn't contravene? Let me rephrase that. Is there a way for the Fixed Term Parliament Act to not contravene the constitution and not require two-thirds parliamentary support for amending the constitution? Are there any ways about it?
From my point of view, it is not possible because it relates on the powers of the Yang Di-Tuan Agong to dissolve parliament on the advice of the prime minister, where there's no mention of a fixed term period at all. Any time that the prime minister decides to advise the Yang Di-Tuan Agong, then the Yang Di-Tuan Agong may or may not dissolve parliament. So in that respect, when you have a fixed term period of parliamentary life, then it has to be the changes would have to be made on the in the constitution and cannot be made by a mere act of parliament.
So do you think having a fixed term parliament act is a good thing or necessary in the case of Malaysia?
Okay, of course, there are advantages and disadvantages. The advantages, of course, is to ensure that the government of the day after an election will continue in power until the parliament's period ends. So there's no issue of parliament to be dissolved in the immediate terms or in a midterm or before the end of the end of the fixed period. But then again, you see, if we have a fixed term parliament law, we need to also maintain democracy, you see, because one element of democracy is for the members of parliament to decide whether the prime minister has the majority command of support in parliament or not. So meaning a vote of no confidence still exists, even though we have a fixed term parliament. First, the advantage is for the government of the day to continue and develop and plan for the full 5 years without any interruptions. From the opposition point of view is that the prime minister cannot choose when he wants to dissolve parliament, because at any time, at this moment, any time parliament, can be dissolved based on the political decisions of the government of the day. So that would not happen. That would be an advantage to the opposition, would be advantage also to the government of the day.
Prof Nick, we've seen how the use of statutory declarations can destabilize a government. Can I? And you mentioned earlier, there's no law that disallows the use of SDs. How should we think about SDs? SDs as a method to determine loss of confidence? Should we stop using SDs as an instrument to pledge support or not pledge support? Will an FTPA be an effective law to stop the use of the change of government via SDs?
Yeah, we have a very interesting history on SDs. I mean, it happened in Sarawak in the 60s, and it was finally decided that that kind of in documentation or documentary evidence were not be sufficient to make the government to get the government to be unsupported anymore, right? But in the 90s, there was a case happened in Perak where the private court decided that SDs can be used to determine whether the Menteri Besar at that point of time had support a majority or not. So since then, SD has been used. After Sheraton move, there was an SD being submitted to the Yang Tuan Agong. After that as well, at the time Tan Sri Muhyiddin was the Prime Minister, another group of SD was also submitted before Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri was appointed as a Prime Minister. So in that respect, SD had been accepted as a part of a legal or constitutional method of showing no confident vote outside Parliament. But to me, even if we accept SD, I think it is Parliament who should be deciding on this issue. So therefore, even after SD has been submitted and a new Prime Minister has been appointed, there is a need to table a vote of confidence, for example, when Parliament convenes. So that will be a better position. That will be a better system of determining whether the government of the day has that support in Parliament.
Thank you so much for speaking with me, Professor Dr. Nick Ahmad Kamal, Nick Mahmud there, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.